Scientists are saying that it's now increasingly likely that an asteroid or a comet impact could have reignited massive volcanic eruptions in India 66 million years ago. The new data was published in the journal Science, saying that the two catastrophes...
Hey, this is YD from the Hail Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
Contributed to the mass extinction that killed off the dinosaurs. And the million-year sequence of eruptions gushed lava flows for distances of over 310 miles, which created the Deccan Traps. Senior author from UC Berkeley, Paul René, said the eruptions occurred within 50,000 years and maybe 30,000 years of the impact. The new research also confirms earlier estimates, but surprisingly suggests three-quarters of the lava erupted after the impact, where previous studies say that 80% of the lava erupted before the impact. If the Deccan Traps erupted prior to the impact, the gases emitted would have started a global warming event, where species would have evolved to the warm temperatures, only to be met by global cooling from dust or climate cooling gases from the impact or the volcanoes. First author Courtney Sprain said that if lava from the Deccan Traps emerged after the impact, then the extinction scenario needs rethinking.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby!
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, philosophy, history, the news cycle, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. It is a fact that I love dinosaurs. All people, we all love dinosaurs. Let's face it. What do dinosaurs have to do with a French philosopher and a French painter and Mark Zuckerberg? You might be surprised. Stay with me. We can tie it all together and see where it goes. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Just use your preferred non-denominational web search browser to take you to thedavebowmanshow.com. Ego biberi capulis et olive viverv. I drink coffee that others might live. And today that is especially true. So I was all set to go at 10 o'clock. I was going to do it live. And then my wife got in the Subaru this morning because she had an appointment to go to, a medical appointment to go to, and everything went haywire. I don't know. We got back from a 1,900-mile round trip. Everything worked fine. We got home Saturday, you know, late. Sunday, everything was fine. Monday, everything was fine. We get up this morning, and she has to go to an early medical appointment this morning, and the Subaru does that. Every alarm on the panel is going off. Every single one. Of course, you can't look this up. It starts emailing me stuff saying, "Dave, we've got problems here, Dave. We got problems. You need to do something." So I call the dealer. Of course, they don't answer. They're just voicemail. So I start looking around. Again, I'm not a mechanic, folks. But I'm familiar enough with cars to know what's. So I do all the normal stuff: check engine light, check the gas cap, right? Especially in this era, and I checked the gas cap, and it's fine. We last gassed up on Saturday, probably around 6, 7 p.m., and everything was fine until Tuesday morning. So anyway, I ended up it still drove. So I took it down to the dealer and walked in there and showed him the video I took of the panel. This is what's wrong. This guy looks at it for 10 seconds. He looks at that video and goes, "Gas cap's loose." I said, "No, it's not. I personally checked that. It's not loose." "Oh, okay." So he goes out, checks the gas cap, comes back in, says, "The gas cap's loose." I said, that's not even possible, but B, okay, whatever. We still have all these alarms. He goes, "I have to get the code machine to reset it." And I know they weren't telling me the truth because they had to get under the hood to do something, and he didn't tell me what it was, but they reset all the alarms, and supposedly everything's fine now. So we'll see. So anyway, that's how my day started. That's what I was doing at 10 o'clock instead of this. And there you go. Will Durant once wrote a book called The Philosophy of History, and it's a fantastic book. I highly recommend the book. Anything by Will Durant, I highly recommend. But it reminds me that the study of history is really more about the present than it is the past. Somebody was pointing out this morning on one of the places I follow. You know, George Patton used his knowledge of history and geography to plan his routes for his attacks, particularly in North Africa. And he was inspired by Hannibal and Carthage and those kinds of things. So we understood those histories. You know, obviously Russia was able to use history to use its geography in its favor. I'm actually reading a book right now about 10 countries that have really been defined by their geography. I don't remember the title of the book right off the top of my head, but it's fascinating reading. And it's all this history combined with why things are the way they are today, how they work today. So when we study history, we're not necessarily looking for names, dates, and places. And this is what I tell people all the time. Look, those things are a starting point. Okay. On October 8th, 1941, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Great, I get it. But why? We need to get into the people. We need to get into the personalities. We need to get into the events of what happened and why. We need to understand those things. My own family history is, you know, similar to that. On October 8th, 1862, my great-grandfather walked from Ashdown County, Arkansas, to Rolla, Missouri, to enlist in the Union Cavalry. I know what the 1st Arkansas Cavalry U.S. did. What I want to know is, why did he do that? I mean, I know why. I've read enough books about those people to understand what their general thinking was, but I want to hear it from him. But he didn't leave me anything. He didn't leave me any writings. He didn't leave me anything. I was talking to my parents over the weekend. I was, you know, about family history and stuff like that. And I you know, look, these things happen. And when we start looking at them, the why they happened is every bit as important as the effects that they've had subsequent to that. Now, sometimes it's a scientific reason. You know, October 8th, 65 million years ago, an asteroid impacted on the Earth and it changed everything. We know this. But we don't know the details of it per se. And how much of our current world is because of those things that happen. In our world today, the study of history has become passé. People don't like it. People don't want to do it. We've talked about the fact that history folks are going down and you know, whys and wherefores and articles are written about all this stuff and how things are changing and why. And it's a little disappointing, but I come back to, I think it's about the philosophy. I don't think people like to think about the philosophy behind a historical event, the people behind it. We like our answers cut and dried, A or B. If person A says a thing, person B has an option to either agree or disagree with that person. And in our world today, it's almost like we have to disagree with someone else. We have to, because we've taken positions that are so extreme. We don't want to think about anything anymore. We don't want to consider what it might mean. If person A said a thing and I don't like person A, then I definitely have to agree with him. It doesn't matter what he's talking about or she is talking about. The facts of the case don't matter. It's the messenger. And so we get these headbutting things. And this leads to, with the expansion, the rise of social media, this has created an even greater, you know, what's the Dunning-Keller thing, you know, where people who have Googled something for 5 minutes are some suddenly experts about it, and they feel like they can argue with anybody. Sean Hannity arguing with the CDC director about epidemiology. Now, who are you going to believe? The director of the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, or a construction worker who made it in radio? I mean, look, whether you like Sean Hannity or not is irrelevant, but the process is what I'm talking about. Why couldn't Sean Hannity have said, hey, can you teach me why this works this way? Can you explain this to me so that I understand what you understand, as opposed to simply saying, no, you're wrong. It's that simple. So what does all this have to do with dinosaurs, you might be asking? Mark Zuckerberg. Of course, Mark Zuckerberg is calling for regulation of speech on his platform, Facebook. We're going to get into more of that tomorrow. But the idea that he wants the government to step in and tell us what we can and can't say on social media is a little unnerving, especially in an era when everything is extreme. Everything is either person A or person B. There's no discussion about any of the stuff in the middle. And the facts, who cares about the facts? What I want is the result I want. And there you go. I'll give you an example from paleontology. Some years ago, most of you know this, I was a Christian pastor for many years, and my father's a pastor, and my grandfather was a pastor, and who knows before that. I was a fourth generation member of the denomination I belong to, the Salvation Army, which is a church, not a social services agency. I don't know if you knew that or not, but the fundamental beliefs of that church, one of which is that the Bible is literal and that therefore God created the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh, and that's it. Six 24-hour days, and boom, off you go. Well, of course, this creates problems for people who are growing up, you know, studying science and that sort of thing. It kind of makes it difficult to relate to some of that stuff. And, you know, how do I resolve those two things? And that was a huge issue for me for many, many years. And at one point, I went to the Museum of Natural History in Denver, and I have a picture of this somewhere, and I cannot find it. I tried desperately to find this picture. But it's a picture of a fossil. It is a lot of fossils. It's like 100 dead fish fossilized, and they're all just laying there, and it's obvious that they all died at the same time, okay? And they were immediately covered by sediment, and they were fossilized, and it's a nice piece. I mean, I'm not trying to get anybody fired up or anything. It's a nice piece. But what does it mean? How do you interpret that? How do you look at that? And I was sharing that with a friend of mine some years ago who explained to me that this was proof of Noah's flood. And that's what he believed. Well, I didn't necessarily buy into that, but it clearly left me with some questions. What would cause 100 fish plus fish to be suddenly buried like that and killed? I mean, you know, that's not normal, is how it goes along. When we were walking last week, I told you about, we saw this ichthyosaur up at the prehistoric gardens laying there on the beach, or the bank of the creek. And at first we thought, well, it just fell over. But if you read the sign real close there, it describes to us the fact that this particular model of an ichthyosaur had actually been deposited there by a large wave or something that rolled in and left the ichthyosaur beach there and to its fate, which was no doubt to probably be eaten, as scavengers will tend to do. These fish that I saw in Denver, however, weren't scavenged. They were obviously covered and they fossilized. What could cause something like that? What could turn one of these fish like this, any one fish or a group of fish like that, into a fossil? Well, of course, the object here was that, you know, like I said, one of my friends firmly believes that this is proof of Noah's flood. I don't, but whatever you want to believe. But up in North Dakota over the last couple of years or so, a guy by the name of De Palma from the University of Kansas, this is him casting a fossil bone and getting ready to, I love his assistant there. I love her shirt, Jurassic Park. That's awesome. Anyway, they have come up with a theory that what they have found is particularly interesting. Why, you might add? Well, they think that they have found what is called a seismically induced, follow me here, seismically induced onshore surge deposit at the KP boundary in North Dakota. Why does that matter? Well, the KP boundary is essentially the boundary line at which the dinosaurs 65 million years ago, 66 million years ago, depending on, you know, which textbook you read, on October 8th, were killed by the asteroid that hit the Earth, boom, blew up, and all these guys were sent on their way, evolutionarily speaking. And so they went, you know, extinct. And so this particular fish, this particular bed that Mr. De Palma has worked in, he believes shows a seismically induced onshore surge deposit, a giant tidal wave that deposited all of these dead fish, all these now fossilized fish, in a single layer on a single day at a single time, probably the same day that the asteroid hit, because that's the day that the tidal wave would have surged. Now, remember, what is North Dakota now wasn't always North Dakota. It was coastline or shallow ocean or those kinds of things, and things change. So what does all this matter? I mean, what, Dave? What does this have to do with the way we view history, the way we act towards each other, the way we think about things? No big surprise here. When this story first broke, it broke as a press release from the University of Kansas, which is where Mr. De Palma works, and the press release was pretty remarkable. Fossils from the day the asteroid hit the Earth have been found. Ta-da! Proof of the asteroid hit kind of thing. But, you know, keep in mind, press releases are written by, well, press agents, not scientists. Okay? And so there was a great deal of in the world of paleontology and scientists. Now, I'm not a paleontologist. I'm not a scientist. But I love this stuff. Okay? If I was 40 years younger and starting over again, I might go that direction. But as it stands right now, I sort of, I follow it pretty closely. And so when I saw this, I immediately started a text conversation with my favorite paleontologist, the only paleontologist I actually know, Denver, from Montana State. And I enjoy talking with Denver for a couple of reasons. One, he's British, and anytime you're talking to a British person, it's fun, especially a British person who has moved to the United States, the badlands of the Northern Plains, North Dakota, Montana, and digs up dinosaurs. By the way, they found four last season. They found four, I think he said four fully, or at least one of which is fully articulated T-Rexes. They're actually going to be pulling them out of the rock this year. And that's pretty exciting to me. But at any rate, I started texting him. I said, what do you think of this? His reply was very guarded. He was like, Dave, this is just a press release. Let's wait till we see the actual paper, which is supposed to be published next week. This was last week in the journal, The Proceedings of Natural Sciences. And I thought that was a very wise thing to say. We don't actually know what this thing says yet. We really don't. Boy, did that not stop people from exploding. You think we have controversies over Bob Barr and investigations and borders and, you know, pass interference, non-calls. You should see what's going on with this. Now, people are, texts and tweets and postings are flying back and forth. People are saying things. There's one guy out there that's just absolutely livid that Mr. De Palma is getting any credit for any of this because, quote, he didn't discover this bed. It's been known for years. Okay. But again, it's a press release. Did he actually say that in his thing? I mean, boy, the whole thing just got really out of hand really quick. And the thing to keep in mind is that all of this hatred, all of this argument, all of this A is right, B is wrong, B is right, B A is wrong arguing that is so typical of the political arguments that we have today. It doesn't matter the topic, folks. This is about fossils in North Dakota that are at least 65 million years old. Do you understand that? Nothing in this debate is going to change your day-to-day life. Nothing in this is going to pay your light bill. Nothing in this is going to feed your family. It's just science. I mean, granted, it's important and it's interesting and it's fun and I love it. But in the real world, from day to day, what do we learn from this? Well, we learn maybe that we need to revise how the world functions. So maybe there's some philosophy there of history and how we look at things. And so it is important, but to the average person, it's not. And all of this going on Twitter and social media, all of this hateful destruction and name calling and everything else, as I said, it's prototypical of every argument that we have, isn't it? And that's what caught my attention. I don't know if it's true or not. I'm waiting to see where this goes. As you saw earlier, I have the paper. I've read it once. It's not exactly, you know, it's not written. It's not even written in Supreme Courtese. It's written in scientificese. I like this kind of stuff because I have to stop every third or fourth word sometimes to look up stuff and read it. And I don't totally understand it, but there's a map right there you see in the middle of where this place was 65 million years ago. You can see it was on the shore. So all of this is important, but again, is it worth all that? Is it worth all that argument? Is it worth all that debate, discussion, argument? That's the real question, isn't it? In the middle of all this, I stumbled across a quote, and I started chasing that quote around, and I started looking at some things, and some things that really interested me. And as I was considering how this whole thing works together, this guy, Edouard de Baponsan, I've misspelled his name there. It's actually S-A-N at the end, not S-O-N, is a painter. He is a painter in France around the turn of the century. He is noted particularly for painting what are known as scenes of the common man, I guess is the best way to put it. They're scenes that portray things of interest to people who are not necessarily in power. And one of his most famous paintings is this. And if you're offended by breasts on classic art, I'm sorry, but this is the painting that he painted. And it is called Truth Comes Out of a Well. And this is a picture of Truth portrayed as a woman with a mirror climbing out of the well, which is an image that draws back to Greek mythology and that sort of thing. And to her left, as you see there, there are two figures trying to keep her in the well. One of them is a cleric, one of them is a religious person, and one of them is assumed to be a military person. This was painted around the time of the Dreyfus affair in France, which I'm not going to go into, but you had two powerful interests, both the clerics and the government, who wanted to keep the truth of the Dreyfus affair hidden. And so they made up other stories. They made up other ideas to explain what was going on in the Dreyfus affair. And again, you can go look that up yourself. I'm not going to take the time to explain it right now. And in the middle of all this, the quote that set me off is from a guy by the name of Emil Cioran. He is a Romanian. And this is what he had to say. Each of us believes, quite unconsciously, of course, that we alone pursue the truth, which the rest are incapable of seeking out and unworthy of attaining. This madness is so deep-rooted and yet so useful that it is impossible to realize what would become of each of us if we were someday to disappear. He wrote that in his discourse called The Inconvenience of Being Born. Now, when I read these things and I see these things and I hear these things, it's important to keep in mind that if we're thinking about the philosophy behind these things, if we're looking at why people do things as opposed to what people do, why is Mark Zuckerberg calling for regulation of Facebook, for censorship of Facebook by the government of the United States, which again is supposedly not supposed to be doing those things. But why would he do this? Why would paleontologist A scream and yell at paleontologist B over whether or not this 65-million-year-old fish that is dead, still dead, means anything or not, or means what this person says it means or not? And the arguments have become so personal, they've become so entrenched, they've become so passionate, that it's clear that there's no middle ground. Each of them believes that they are seeking the truth, and they alone, and that you, the other people, are not capable of grasping it, not seeing it the way they see it. And this has become so deep-rooted in us that we don't literally... we've forgotten how to be humans. We've forgotten how to talk to people. We've forgotten how to debate, discuss things, which is why I appreciate Denver's response all the more. Hey, Dave, let's wait until we see what's actually in the paper before we start pulling the judgments, before we start all these arguments, before we start smacking people upside the head, before we start doing all of that. Let's see what he has to say. A press release is not... it's not a paper. Now, since then, the paper's come out, and you'll be happy to know that it leaves as many questions unanswered as it does answered. This is the kind of thing that scientists are going to be arguing about for years, and I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. I look forward to following it for many, many years. What I don't look forward to is a bunch of people yelling at each other that, no, you're wrong, and only I have the truth, and only I understand what's going on. Only I know what this means. Only I can say what things are happening. As Tom Lehrer, the great social, whatever you want to call him, pianist, once said, no one is more dangerous than someone who thinks he has, quote-unquote, the truth. To be an atheist is almost as arrogant as to be a fundamentalist, and he's absolutely right. The truth is somewhere in the middle. Maybe this fossil find will teach us things that are true, and maybe that'll cause us to think in different ways. And more importantly, maybe we should be asking questions and thinking in different ways. Maybe instead of going, Zuckerberg's an idiot, or Zuckerberg's a genius, we ought to be asking questions. Why does he want this? What is his real game here? What can we learn from history that will teach us what's really happening here? What fossils can we look at? What impacts can we look at down in Yucatan? What can we think about? As opposed to just assuming that I'm right and you're wrong. Right? But unfortunately, as Mr. Chacon said, we don't think that way. And whether you're talking about scientists arguing over 65-million-year-old dead fish, or Congress people arguing over a Mueller report, we all sort of seem that we alone pursue the truth, and that everybody else must be wrong. And that's where we make our mistake, isn't it? Just some philosophy before we get into Zuckerberg tomorrow and start really talking about censorship and regulation. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Have a great day, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow when we start talking about government regulation of social media. Have a wonderful day, everybody.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.